Well, that reading from Lamentations was rather bleak. And the lesson from Luke seems to be a bit of a harangue and even contains what appears to be a non sequitur. So what's going on here today? What are we to make of what the lectionary has dealt out to the preacher and to you? Well, we put the Luke story in context, and that will begin to unlock some things for us. Jesus and the disciples are on the road to Jerusalem. They're heading off for that final confrontation that is going to lead to the cross. And we know that Jesus was gravely concerned about the city of Jerusalem and its people and their choices and the lives they were leading. And so this passage from Lamentations, which bemoans the fate of the city, is chosen as the Old Testament lesson to set us up for the New Testament reading. Now, immediately before the verses that Barb just read us, Jesus was teaching his disciples about the imperatives of forgiveness and how if somebody wrongs you, you are supposed to offer forgiveness. And if they wrong you again, still have to forgive. Seven times you have to do this. Now, the disciples, to their credit, recognize that forgiving people can be hard work. It can be difficult. And so they turn to Jesus and they ask for more faith. They want some help. Give me a boost. Supersize me. I need more faith, each of the disciples says to Jesus. And that seems like a perfectly reasonable request. But then Jesus responds with what sounds like a scolding observation. If only you had faith the size of a mustard seed, then you could move trees. And then he pivots into this baffling parable about masters and slaves. What are we to make of all of this? What can we take away from these observations, these teachings by Jesus? Well, when we look beneath the surface and we see what Jesus is getting at, these texts make sense, and indeed we can see why they go together. In the first part of the lesson, Jesus is indeed talking about faith. There's no big surprise there. But consider this. Nowhere in the gospel does Luke say anything about Jesus' intonation, his deportment, his posture, his facial expression. We've just assumed over the years that Jesus is dressing down the disciples, that he's criticizing them. But what if he is instead exhorting them and offering them encouragement? What if he's saying, you can do it. All you need, an itty-bitty little bit of faith, and you will be able to do amazing things. Now, I will break the news to you. Jesus is not telling the disciples, and he is not telling us through Luke, that if we have faith, we will be able to perform magic tricks. Okay? No one is going to be able to leave the sanctuary today and levitate a car. But we will be able to do amazing things for God and God's people. Which brings us to the second part of the reading. These difficult words about the slave-master relationship. Now, understandably, we get really uncomfortable around this. We believe that slavery is one of the great sins of human history. It is wrong, it is heinous, it is egregious, and even using it as a metaphor makes us uncomfortable. But that was the world in which Jesus lived, and he was trying to communicate something vitally important that we need to grasp. The master here, as in so many of his other stories, is God. And the disciples, and you and I, are the slaves. The relationship is absolute. God is in charge. And we have no claim on God. It doesn't matter if we come to church every single Sunday of the year. It doesn't matter if we sing lustily. It doesn't matter if we offer superlative pastoral care or volunteer for every committee the church has. We don't have a claim on God. There is nothing we can do that gives us a purchase on God. But then think about the testimony, the witness offered by the prophets and in Jesus, that God, the creator of the universe, has chosen us to be his people. God, on whom we have no claim, loves us and heals us and redeems us. That reality should be empowering. And like a feedback loop, it should feed our faith. Now, I believe our faith is a gift from God. It's not something we can gin up out of nowhere. But faith is like a pet. Somebody can give you a puppy or a kitten. But once you've gotten that gift, you have to take care of it. If you want your pet to grow and to thrive, you have to pay it attention, and you have to feed it, and you have to exercise it, and you have to take responsibility for it. Our faith is just like that. God has given us faith, but we have to work at developing it. And so we have different disciplines, like coming to church and volunteering to help our neighbors and reading scripture. And our spiritual exercises at times can be about as rewarding as physical exercise. Oh, we know we're going to benefit if we go out and we walk our steps or run a few miles or go to the gym. But let's be honest, there are mornings when we would prefer to stay in bed. And going out and exercising is just not doing it for us. And we want to give up. That's where Jesus is saying, all you need is faith like a mustard seed, just a little bit. Give it a shot. You can do it. I was given a wonderful example, illustration of how this works through a book I read last week. It was a novel by Robert Harris called Conclave. And some of you may be familiar with Harris. He's written bestsellers like Fatherland and Enigma, and more recently a trilogy about the great Roman orator and politician Cicero. Now, Harris began his career as a political reporter, and he was a very keen observer of people and how they jostle for power and how they treat one another and how the relationships unfold. And he's explored these themes throughout his fiction over the years. In his most recent book, he writes about the election of a new pope. And what I found remarkable about this story is that Harris told a reporter from The Guardian in London that he is not a believer, but he was fascinated. And so he spent time learning about papal conclaves and how things unfold. And he went to the Vatican and he talked to people. And in this book, he depicts the cardinals as being eminently human. They have weaknesses and failings and they make mistakes, but they all believe in God. He's not writing a story in which these are just a bunch of politicians wearing funny clothes. But they're all people of faith. And the protagonist of the story is Cardinal Lomelli, who is the dean of the College of Cardinals. He is the one tasked with running the conclave. And at this critical juncture in his life and that of his church, he's hit a bit of a spiritual dry spot. His last conversation with the late Pope was unfulfilling. His friend had said he wasn't a pastor, but a manager. And when he prays, he isn't feeling God's presence. And yet he's the one charged with running the process to elect a new pope. And so he applies himself and he prays, even when he feels his prayers are arid. And wouldn't you know it, as crisis after crisis unfolds, there are moments when he feels God's presence, when he can feel the Spirit at work. And it carries him through to the end. A pope is elected, I won't tell you who. But Lomelli has drawn on what faith he has to move forward. And though this is a story about a prince of the church, it's really about a man with wobbly faith. Robert Harris gets what it's like to be a person of faith. It can be hard, and at times it can be frustrating. But we need to believe in our faith the way God believes in us. And we should keep on moving forward. God is not asking you or me to be Mother Teresa. We are not called to have the courage of Martin Luther King Jr. No one's telling us to be Luther and nail feces to the door of the church. But we are being called to be ourselves and to have confidence in even that little itty-bitty bit of faith we might have. To believe that God can work through and in us, as fallible and as flawed and as pathetic as we may be. That working with each of us and all of us, God can do wondrous things. So let's hold on to Jesus' exhortation. We don't need a lot of faith, just a little bit. We can hear his words calling out, you and you and you and me, we can do it. We really can.